But let's get things started with Ottessa Moshfegh. Ottessa is a rising star among young literary fiction writers. I caught up with her during her Milwaukee tour stop at Boswell Book Company for her novel, My Year of Rest and Relaxation. It was a Moshfegh mosh pit, and Ottessa was every bit as smart, captivating, and funny in person as she is on the page. She joined me at WPR's Milwaukee studios to talk about her book.
My Year of Rest and Relaxation is a novel about a young woman in her mid-20s living in Manhattan in the year 2000 and 2001. She has a strange project that she's setting off on, and that is that she'd like to sleep for a year. She has this idea that if she can sleep for long enough, her cells will have regenerated the number of times it would take for them to have forgotten whatever trauma or memory they had been storing in her body and mind. So she's doing this year of hibernation in an attempt to start herself over.
Yeah, and I can really relate to this idea of hibernation because of my history of depression, which was magnified the time I would spend living in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, because the winters there are brutal. It gets colder than Siberia on some days, colder than Mars. And so I often thought, geez, it would be really nice to hibernate and escape from reality until winter's over. Is this idea of hibernation and sleeping as an escape, is that something that resonates with you?
I wish that it did more because then maybe I would sleep more. But I'm a little bit too high-wired to take on this kind of project. And I think, you know, people have asked me like, well, why did you write this book? And it's kind of a fantasy, a projection of a fantasy self that could sleep. Because I've always been kind of an insomniac and I'm always really, really tired.
Yeah. Why did you decide not to name your protagonist?
For a bunch of reasons. I think, you know, my general rule is I like characters with names. A name can do so much. Every reader has an association with a name, even into the subtleties of the spelling of a name. If I had named her Christine with a K, that would connote something different than Christine with a CH. But there was no name for this character. There was nothing that I could come up with that would be blank enough for the reader to understand her on only the terms that she is putting forth through her narrative. The other reason was that this is about a young woman who's trying in many ways to erase herself and her identity, so it would make sense that she would be unnamed.
Your protagonist's best friend, if we can call her best friend, is Reva, and there's a very fascinating relationship, very interesting dynamic between your protagonist and Reva. Can you talk a bit about their friendship?
Right. Well, the protagonist and Reva have been friends since college, so maybe they've known each other 5 or 6 years by now, and they seem to be feeding off each other in a way that I think could only be described as resentful and desperate projectioning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
They're very different kinds of people. My protagonist, you find out, is from a very wealthy family. She's a lot of privileges in terms of money and background. Her parents, however, are deceased. And we find out as the book goes on that they didn't really seem to love her or even know her very well. The protagonist is also someone who's very pretty. She describes herself as effortlessly beautiful. She's tall and thin and blonde and looks good in everything and has good taste and studied art history and is cultured, in quotation marks. Reva, on the other hand, is from a more working class family from Long Island. She's Jewish. She is insecure about her appearance, so insecure about her appearance that she becomes obsessed with her clothes and makeup and her weight and, you know, her hairstyle and all that kind of thing. And that takes up a lot of room in her personality, this obsession with her external. She's a very jealous person. She resents the protagonist for everything that comes so easy to her because Reva thinks that she life has been unfair to her because she's had to work so much harder for all the things the protagonist has just been given.
Nothing hurt Riva more than effortless beauty, like mine. When we'd watched Before Sunrise on video one day, she'd said,
"Did you know Julie Delpy's a feminist? I wonder if that's why she's not skinnier. No way they'd cast her in this role if she were American. See how soft her arms are? Nobody here tolerates arm flab. Arm flab is a killer. It's like the SATs. You don't even exist if you're below 1400. "Does it make you happy that Julie Delpy has arm flab?" I'd asked her. "No," she'd said after some consideration. "Happiness is not what I'd call it. More like satisfaction."
And I think when the protagonist takes on this year of rest and relaxation, which requires her to take copious amounts of psychiatric medications, Riva finds a way, finally, to feel above the protagonist and uses every opportunity she can get to kind of be poking the protagonist with her elbow to be like, you know, "I am better than you now." So they're competitive.
Yeah, yeah. We've got to talk about it. One other standout character is Dr. Tuttle, who could well be the world's worst psychiatrist. That's a lot of the comedy. The book is funny throughout, and you have such a great ability to write comedy and just to craft these beautiful sentences. But is Dr. Tuttle based on anyone you know?
Dr. Tuttle is based on... she's sort of an amalgamation and a satire of some psychiatrists that I've seen both in real life and in, like, let's say, like, media.
"The biggest threats to brains nowadays are all the microwave ovens," Dr. Tuttle explained on the phone that night. "Microwaves, radio waves. Now there are cell phone towers blasting us with who knows what kind of frequencies. But that's not my science. I deal in treating mental illness. Do you work for the police?" she asked me. "No, I work for an art dealer at a gallery in Chelsea." "Are you FBI? "No." "CIA? "No, why?" "I just have to ask these questions. Are you DEA, FDA, NICB, NHCAA? Are you a private investigator hired by any private or governmental entity? Do you work for a medical insurance company? Are you a drug dealer, drug addict? Are you a clinician, a med student, getting pills for an abusive boyfriend or employer? NASA?"
She is the comic relief in this book, although she is also in some ways the most terrifying character to me because she has so much power because she has this prescription pad and can dole out whatever toxic elements this protagonist might be requesting. But Dr. Tuttle appeared to me as a character in her totality. She was immediately funny, immediately absurd, and immediately like someone that I just wanted to watch do stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I wanted to be in her space, in her home office with all her weird stuff.
You really skewer the phoniness and pretentiousness of the contemporary art scene in New York City because your protagonist works at this art gallery called Ducat, and their star artist is a guy named Ping Shi. Can you tell me a bit about Ping Shi?
Ping Shi is this young Chinese-American artist that is lauded by the gallerist for which the protagonist works as, you know, this the new hot thing in the scene. And our narrator has been working as a gallery girl, a glorified, not even a secretary, someone who just sits in a gallery and is sort of paid to look cool and scoff at people that walk in off the street.
Yeah, to be kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think maybe she enjoys that position up until a certain point. But the art in this gallery is so completely ridiculous. But this was also, you know, this is the year 2000. A culture in New York City was different. There was both more grit, more glamour. There was more excess, like rolling off the financial boom of the 90s. And people seemed to be having more fun. Art was more principally a visceral experience of something visual. Ping Shi is just like this new young kid on the scene, and he has like an entourage of cool New York City scenester followers and sort of represents the other side of meaninglessness. If the protagonist is representing the meaninglessness of existential crisis, Ping Shi is representing the meaninglessness of, like, effort in absurdity.
Yeah. You came up with what is possibly the greatest name for a drug ever, Infirmiterol. Did that just come to you out of the blue, or did you have to do a lot of thinking to come up with it?
In my mind, I pronounce it Infirmiterol.
Okay. Yes, that's how the audiobook pronounces it. Okay. Me being Canadian and this outrageous Canadian accent, I mispronounce
things.
Okay,
so it's just
the
Canadian pronunciation.
Yeah.
So Infirmiterol is this totally fictional drug that I since understand to be some kind of hypnotic barbiturate. But Infirmiterol came, you've seen these commercials of drugs that I think legally pharmaceutical companies can't say what they do or what they're for. So that they have to be sort of poetic about the way that they characterize a character's suffering during the commercial, sometimes by a cartoon.
Often by a cartoon.
Yeah. Names of the medicines are like almost words.
Yes.
You know, like they're associative, right? They're not literal. So I thought about what Infirmiterol was going to do, and then I was like, okay, well, there's this infirm.
Yes.
is in the word infirm, like not having a strong mind or body, and then also infer, which to me meant that much could be inferred somebody takes this drug. And what I think is inferred is that there's an alternate self that is in control when someone is on Infirmiterol. So, and there, through that alternate self, things from the subconscious are inferred, if this makes any sense.
It makes total sense.
Just as ridiculous as it sounds.
Your novel's epigraph is from a song by my fellow Canadian Joni Mitchell, a song called The Wolf That Lives in Lindsay, which is from the Mingus album, I believe. Mm-hmm. Would you mind reading that epigraph for us?
Oh, sure. These are just a few lines from the song. Joni Mitchell is the most amazing lyricist, but if you ask me. If you're smart or rich or lucky, maybe you'll beat the laws of man. But the inner laws of spirit and the outer laws of nature, no man can. No man can.
Why did you choose that epigraph?
It occurred to me maybe three quarters of the way through this book that what was really deep for me in the writing of this book was that different levels of experience and how much we are not in control. And life in contemporary civilization would have us think that if we just make all the right decisions and impress the right people and get the right education and show up and do the right thing, everything will work out fine, which is ridiculous and I think really dangerous. I was thinking about how much this character seems to be disconnected from herself in the most spiritual way, and I had some compassion for her in her quest to reconnect through sleep somehow, to find this deeper person within her. But inevitably, there are certain things that we can't control, whether it's karma or nature. But I mean, what Joni Mitchell sings, maybe you'll beat the laws of man, but the inner laws of spirit and the outer laws of nature, you know, no one can.
So Franz Kafka's name, of course, has morphed into the adjective Kafkaesque. David Lynch's name has led to the adjective Lynchian. I personally think it's not too soon to start thinking about turning your last name into the adjective Moshfegian or Moshfegesque, if you prefer. What do you think? Do you have a preference, first of all? Do you prefer Moshfegian or Moshfegesque?
What about Moshfegese?
Moshfegese.
Or maybe that would just be the language. Moshfegesque. Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Okay.
It's so awkward.
Well, we can work on that. But do you have any thoughts about what Moshfegesque would mean?
If people were trying to can it, it would probably be the particular stripe of dark comedy that my books exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I actually wrote, I took the liberty of writing, of putting together a definition of it to run by you. And I drew on various sources, including your good friend, Christine McKenna, her definition of Lynchian, because I got a sort of a Lynchian part. Can I run it by you?
Yes.
Okay. Moshfegesque, Of or relating to the fiction of Otessa Moshfegh, sardonic dark comedy in which characters are riddled with existential insecurities and are consequently searching for other ways of being, other worlds, other towns, other selves. Seeing the beauty and ugliness is another key component of the Moshfegh-esque style. Does that sound right?
I got that.
Yeah, it's not bad. Needs work.
I like that.
Can I send it into Oxford at Merriam-Webster? I better run and take another few passes at it first, though.
Yeah.
Well, I want it to be the word of the year. Seriously.
The word of the year.
Well, this is the year of Otessa Moshfegh, I think.
Oh, God.
Otessa Moshfegh is the author of My Year of Rest and Relaxation. One reviewer says it may be the finest existential novel not written by a French author. You can find out more about Otessa at wpr.org/beta.